Hello, and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is Paul Burka, Senior Executive Editor of Texas Monthly Magazine, and it is good to be associated with my former boss, Evan Smith, again.
Thank you, and welcome to the Tribcast for the first week of August. We still have our AAA rating, and that's because we have CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith here.
Reeve has none of my full faith and credit, though. That's
Managing Editor Ross Ramsey.
Clearly in debt.
And Ben Philpott of KUT in the Texas Tribune.
I have no stocks.
Ben is perpetually in default intellectually.
That's right.
We had to get a good insult of Ben in there somewhere.
It's been weeks.
Yeah, to celebrate the return of the usual crew.
Yes, last week's podcast was very interesting. It was a cry-free podcast for Ben. I didn't weep silently like I normally
Jim Henson,
do. When...
It was Jim Henson and Morgan, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was Jim Henson sounding all smart.
And Morgan
smart. Morgan and Ben and I just sitting by the side and not doing anything.
Morgan sounding nice.
She sounded smart.
She's not going to appreciate that when she, if she even bothers to listen to this.
One of the three people that listens to this podcast.
We will be talking about the response and possibly Susan Combs and maybe others in the state. I think that's the plan. Should we get started with the response?
Who's going to start this?
Yeah. Well, no. So the response is coming up, and we are recording this on August 3rd. The response is on August 6th. We're days away from this long-anticipated and, I think, increasingly long-dreaded event, it seems.
Well, I don't know that there are people out in the world dreading it. I wonder whether the governor and his folks are dreading it, given the fact that the response to the response has been so paltry. It's not nearly the massive crowd that you would have expected when they very confidently booked Reliant Stadium for it.
Yeah, so what starts as an idea for 72,000 people at a religious experience somewhere in Houston turns into maybe 10,000, maybe 6,000.
Maybe 8. I mean, as you know, Ken Herman made the good joke today that, you know, what does the response have in common with the Houston Texans games ordinarily played at Reliant Stadium? In both cases, you'll have only about 8,000 people in the stands yelling Jesus Christ.
And then, you know, if you only have...
Between his usual round of bar mitzvah jokes in his column today.
If you only have 8,000 people...
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, but it's about a fifth of what Lakewood Church gets in Houston.
Ross, it's not a lot of people. In fact, you know, the man-on-man coverage, one press member for every one attendee is almost in effect here. I mean, it's not a good term. I can't believe that the governor's folks can say to anybody with a straight face, this was the high turnout we intended.
Well, what I started to say, it is clearly not what they intended. But, you know, I mean, if they just had a different context or set this up differently, you know, 9 or 10,000 people is a lot of people. You can crowd a room with
they
that.
Could
get a smaller, you know,
they could smaller or, venue.
Right.
Right.
They could still theoretically turn out more than 8,000, though, right? I mean, they could, you know.
Well, they may be lowering expectations, right? I mean, that's possible, but maybe more. And this way, since people are saying it's only going to be 8, if it ends up being 13,000, it'll be declared victory, right?
Right, but it's, you know, I mean, it's probably a problem for them that we're talking about the crowd size instead of the content. Maybe it's not.
Believe me, they're perfectly happy for us not talking about the content. Well, the fact is that, you know, the governor now, it seems like, is not going to speak at his own prayer rally. Is that right?
The initiator will be silent.
He said that he doesn't know what he's going to do.
Maybe I'll be an usher, right?
Yeah, maybe he'll be an usher, which seems, you know, surprising that the initiator of the response is his official title on the website. You would think when you initiate something, you might have an idea about.
It just sounds like the stonemason. It sounds like the stonemasons. What does that mean? The initiator of the response?
There was that meme on Twitter for a while, the Texas legislative horse names. Everyone was making up names for potential racehorses based on the Texas Ledge.
It does sound like a Rudyard Kipling thing, right?
It
the initiator
right.
of the response.
Well, you know, there are these rules. Part of what, I mean, Ken Herman's column today was very, very good. And one of the things that in the American Statesman, and one of the things it did was lay out many of the rules of attending the response. Jay Root has actually a binder filled with reams of paper on the response, one of which it turns out is this set of rules. And, you know, be nice to reporters. By the way, it was one of the rules if you were attending the response. Maybe we can start with the initiator.
That's one thing that the Texas Tribune office does not have in common.
No, well, the initiator is not a big fan of the press himself, and so maybe we have a problem.
I don't know that the reporters will know how to act. That'll be very unusual.
But the other one was, you know, be respectful to people in the crowd. You know, no big signs. I think they're actually trying to tamp down the potential for this to be a bad backdrop for the governor. Right?
No political attire.
Right, it's a prayer meeting. Don't be a jerk. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the basics here, right?
Behave like you're in church.
Right,
right,
in church in a gigantic stadium.
Which is exactly what people were afraid it wouldn't be at the outset.
right?
That it would be a big political rally.
Right.
People would. That's interesting that they're having the rule of, you know, don't bring a Perry shirt or don't bring a Perry sign, because I kind of assumed that that's what you would see, even if it weren't everyone in the crowd, a few of those, you know, here and there.
You don't need to do all that stuff for this kind of thing to work politically. I mean, if you pull a thing together, you know, we talked about this a little bit in the Lost podcast. I mean, if you pull a crowd together and say, here we are, here's Rick Perry, and you come back 6 months later and you tell your people, I want you to vote. You don't have to tell them who to vote for. They got the signal. You know, you don't have to wear a T-shirt.
There were so many insights in the Lost podcast.
Yeah, it was such a great thing.
But again, though, I think the issue for the governor is we knew all along he'd be walking a fine line. He's continuing to walk a fine line. Right now, this looks a couple days out like a little bit more of a political liability than we expected if the turnout is really, really low. Sam Brownback of Kansas was the only governor expected to attend. He now appears not to be attending. So the governor extended an invitation to 49 governors. He will be stood up by 49 governors, right? None of them will have come to this thing. I wonder if he would like to join the list of governors not in attendance. I mean, it just seems like something that they're going to get past.
Well, I wouldn't have been surprised if this week he had come out and announced that he was running for president. I kind of thought that was his out, right? I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago or something. You know, if he announces this week that he's running for president, then he obviously can't come to this prayer rally because it would politicize the event too much.
Well, and the thing next week, or in the week after that, and the week after that, is how sticky is this thing? I mean, you know, once we
anybody talking about it after
right week, once we've right. got out of this prayer rally, and you know, however many people showed up, and you get the daily news stories, you get the Sunday news shows. Yeah. And we move on to Iowa and all of those things, Perry announcing and so on. Is this sticky? Is this something we're going to keep referring to, or is it going to be that thing back there?
Well, you know, but it depends on how it depends on how much you want to make it like Jeremiah Wright. I mean, Jeremiah Wright.
This is Obama's preacher, right?
Was, you know, the GD America speech that was, you know, over and over again used. President Obama wasn't even
way to keep the podcast clean, Ben.
Sorry.
GD America sounds like a brand of jeans. Go ahead.
They fit my legs quite nicely. That was used over and over again. President Obama was not in the congregation on the day that sermon was given. Well, what about this, where you have someone standing at the podium and the shot behind is Perry sitting.
Well, the danger
right
is that
them.
John Hagee lays a little Whore of Babylon on you.
Right. And Governor Perry, I mean, you know, if that was a big deal, that a minister at a church that Obama was not even at the time that this speech was given became a big deal, what's it going to look like with Governor Perry sitting behind
Hagee?
You make
a very interesting point. I wonder to what degree not only have there been rules published for the attendees, but also rules published for the people up on stage, the degree to which they're going to put a leash on these folks.
The problem here is not what they do on stage. The problem here is that they're going to be photographed next to the governor, and then what they did off stage or did in another venue is going to be pulled out to
unless
his detriment by
stage.
His opponents.
Unless he shows
if
up
John
at the very beginning
taken,
and then takes off.
If you've got a picture of Rick Perry with John Hagee, and John Hagee said something 10 years ago or said something 6 months from now, that plays into this race, then that becomes
the issue.
How much more of a political liability is it if it turns out to be a non-event than if it had been this big event with all these people on stage and all this enthusiasm? We just have that B-roll playing for the rest of the election.
None. If this plane is landed safely without incident, what will happen is exactly what Ross said. He will announce for president in the next week to 10 days, and that's all anyone's going to be talking about.
Right. And frankly, a full Coliseum,
it's not a disaster.
A full Coliseum, if this thing had worked, you know, you've always got this picture of, you know, this is the Michael Deaver thing. Pictures are stronger than words, right? Mm-hmm. If the words are Rick Perry did this prayer thing and we don't like that and blah 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 blah, and at the whole time that they're saying that, you're looking at a full stadium full of people. The picture's pretty good,
right? Although the last time a presidential candidate addressed that many people was Obama in Germany, and you remember that resulted in John McCain putting on an ad comparing him to Britney Spears.
Well, actually, Mile High Stadium.
Well, I guess right, probably when he did the announcement or the acceptance speech.
Right.
Look, there are a lot of ways this can be bad for the governor, but I think there are a lot of ways that it can be fine for the governor. I do think that the amount of press attention on this thing, which I think anticipated a bigger and better attended event, is going to be interesting, because you're going to have a bunch of national newspaper columnists and national TV folks in attendance, and there's going to be a lot of scrutiny of it. I mean, the reasons for it to go without incident have been ratcheted up.
Yeah, but somewhere someone's laughing, saying, "Dang it, they're talking about us," right?
Well, probably so. And you know what? Right. The other candidates may be thinking,
Dang it, they're talking about him.
Dang it, they're talking about him. Right. That's probably true.
Right.
You know, and the other thing is, look, Romney is having a bad go of it right now. You know, the Politico actually did a story this week that referred to Romney's absence from the campaign trail and his absence from the conversation about these big issues as the Mitness Protection Program. You know, which good, it's a good headline.
Nice line, yeah.
Romney's got some stuff here. The opening for Perry continues to be there. It really does.
Yeah, this is, you know, I mean, on balance, I think this is kind of working for Perry. And, you know, they're still not shooting at him in a real serious way. You know, he hasn't got, you know, Mitt Romney hasn't trained gunfire.
Well,
on
the gay, I would say that the gay marriage walk back from the pure 10th Amendment position, and right. to a lesser degree on abortion as well, this week, it was a sign of we aren't in Kansas anymore.
Right. It is that.
Right. I mean, you know, he had to fend off attacks from both sides on both those issues. And well, it's just the beginning.
The whole response is we're not in Kansas anymore thing too, right? I mean, it's like you realize, oh, maybe this is not the sort of thing that plays well in the rest of the country the way it might be expected to in Texas.
If he were not running for president, would anybody care about this?
But would it have even been initiated in the first place?
Would he have done it?
Right. Well,
would he have done it?
Well, I'm not sure it played bad in Texas. I'm not sure.
Well, we don't know yet how it's
played. Right. I think if he was only on the state stage, I think this would have played differently. I think
it also might have been in a more reasonable venue, which would have eliminated a lot of what we are perceiving as problems right now.
The other thing that's interesting here for Perry, and he's going to have to get used to it, is he has not, I'm going to discount again the Kay Hutchison campaign. Perry has never had a really good Republican opponent. Right. I mean, and I include the last governor's race in that. I mean, he hasn't had somebody who's really taken him to task and made him answer for these things for his own constituents in a way that I think he's having to now, and I think that's going to take some getting used to. Walking back this thing. And
let me ask one more dangerous question before Reeve has that let's move on look in his eyes. But let me ask one more dangerous question. Is his campaign team, as it's coming together, none of whom have, you can say, are really veterans of presidential campaigns?
Carney is.
Well, who is Carney has worked Carney on worked presidential campaigns.
Dole's campaign, George Bush's campaign.
Okay, right. But really, I mean, by and large, the apparatus around Perry is not got a whole lot of deep experience at this, at the national level.
Right.
To what degree is that going to be a factor? And to what degree will they need to augment with people who have done this thing before?
I think they'll have to augment with the kinds of ground professionals that they would use, you know, in New Hampshire, although that's Carney's state. Yeah. You know, you probably need somebody who's got experience at this in South Carolina and in Florida and in Iowa and in yada yada.
But you don't think that the Perry campaign at some point has to bring in, you know, Ed Rollins, like a gun for hire, who has been the campaign manager for countless Republican presidential campaigns.
And hasn't won anything since Reagan.
Well, I mean, maybe, you know, am I remembering this right? Didn't John McCain, I mean, he at some point had to do a major shakeup of his campaign staff. And then he ended up winning. So, I mean,
John Weaver.
So, I could see Governor Perry getting into this and then realizing maybe we need to add a piece here or there, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to end up being a successful campaign.
I don't think we've seen any sign that these guys don't have the chops.
And yeah.
I think you have to assume they have the chops.
I think
at the point,
exactly right.
At the point until you see that they don't. I think, you know, these guys look pretty solid right now. This is working. I mean, you know, this is a leading candidate who's not even in the race. You know, it's like, don't
touch it. Right. Way to grease your sources. Hey. Go ahead.
Well, let's move on to some other Republicans that are going against each other. Earlier this week, last week, I've been away. But at some point, Todd Staples sent a letter to Susan Combs. Yesterday.
Yeah, this is
you were here.
This is like you know, it's like we're playing run and shoot in a race that's 2.5 years from now.
It's unless it's not 2.5 years from now.
It's you know, this is Todd Staples, the agriculture commissioner, who has said outright, I'm going to be running for lieutenant governor since David Dewhurst is running for U.S. Senate, against Susan Combs, who has said, yeah, I might be interested in that job. That's really kind of what she said.
It's interesting, by the way, to think that that's her position. I thought that she was more firmly in that.
No, you know, actually, all she has said is, yeah, I'm interested in that. I'm also, you know, she was an assistant DA to Henry Wade in Dallas County back early in her career. So, you know, potentially an AG candidate, potentially stays where she is, potentially doesn't run. But anyway, Staples thinks she's going to run for lieutenant governor. Jerry Patterson, the land commissioner, who's also in the race, thinks she's going to run for lieutenant governor. And so they've started rolling grenades in their tent. Todd Staples did it this week with a letter that called into question her position on abortion, which I'll talk about in a second, and her this data breach at the agency.
Ella and their private conversations. It starts out saying, you know, I remember a couple years ago we were talking and you said you weren't going to run for lieutenant governor. What happened to that?
Right.
Yeah.
So, but he throws this letter down, and this is the kind of letter that you see, you know, in the early days of a primary that's already underway. And this primary doesn't really start until 2014. Maybe late 2013, after another legislative session, after the, you know, President Perry's first midterm election. I mean, this thing's, all kinds of stuff can happen between now and then. Anyway, so this thing kicks up. It's just kind of interesting that they're already in this race. Dewhurst, I guess, while Evan was out of town, or Reeve was out of town, or somebody was out of town, Dewhurst is in the Senate race. And what we're seeing is everybody sort of maneuvering around. You know, the Republican organization chart has been stuck for a long time with Kay Hutchison and Rick Perry at the top and not moving. And now that they're in motion, everybody else is kind of in motion. And, you know, when they put on their makeup or they shave every morning, they see historic pictures in the mirror, and everybody's trying to move up. Todd Staples is a little overeager, maybe.
Yeah, why do this so early? Just to scare her out of the race from the get-go?
I think it's
save yourself a little money?
I think he's talking to the activists and he's talking to the money people. And just saying, you know, she's not, he's trying to say she's not conservative enough. You know, her position is wrong, he thinks, in that primary on abortion. He thinks she hasn't done her job, and he wants everybody to know that before they sign up.
He's not sincerely looking for clarification on these points, just out of his own curiosity.
Yeah, that's why he sent the letter to
her.
He could have just IM'd her, actually.
He wasn't actually asking, are you really raising campaign funds to pay off your lawsuits?
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, this letter's pretty pointed. It's up on our site.
So what did she respond?
The thing about Staples is he seems like, you know, he's like Mr. Smiley. You know, he's like, you know, nice guy. He doesn't seem like a knife fighter.
It's like the clown in the horror movies, like the Chucky thing. If the clown is smiling and it has a knife.
you just compared Todd Staples to Brad Dourif? Is that what you did? Wow.
Kind of.
Nice reference.
What was Brad Dourif's big role before the Chucky movies?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
He was Billy Bibbit.
And he's amazing in Deadwood, which is my favorite show.
He is a great actor.
But all right, anyway, that's it. That's the podcast.
meanwhile, back here in the infield.
Name dropping Brad Dourif in the podcast is either a new high or a new low. I can't figure out
which. Does Susan Combs respond to Staples' letter, or does she just let that slide? Or does she try? I mean, no, she's going to have to answer these questions.
I interviewed her this morning. You know, we'll have the transcript up by the time you hear this podcast. Right. But I interviewed her this morning, and I started the interview. I pulled the Staples' letter out of my bag and said, "You've seen this, of course." And she looked at it and she said, "Yeah, I haven't read it." Sure you have.
First two words are, "Dear Susan."
Dear Susan.
It's for you.
Right. He said it to me, but it's for you.
Right.
You know, she's basically putting her, you know, trying to stabilize a couple of problems. She's got, you know, they had this data breach at the agency, and she's, you know, this is the first time she's actually come out and really sort of sat down and started talking to reporters about, you know, here's what we did, here's how this all works, and, you know, you shouldn't, you know, it's kind of a long version of "Don't worry your pretty little heads about it." And she is announcing now, you know, what we've talked about some and, you know, frankly have anticipated, that she's changed her position on abortion.
Was she confirmed to you this morning?
Yeah, she started out, and she's not trying to finesse this and say, "Oh, you misunderstood my position." She's not doing that. You know, some people have done that. She said, "I was pro-choice, and now I am pro-life," and says, you know, "I've gone through this, you know, transformation. I think that people are using abortion increasingly and distressingly as a form of birth control, and I don't like that. I was wrong. I'm saying that unequivocally. I am changing my position." And people are either going to believe me or they're not, but it's heartfelt, and, you know, that's kind of her line. It's interesting. I mean, you know,
and as a sign of it, she did what?
She gave $5,000 to the South Austin Crisis Pregnancy Center, which is a non-abortion.
These are the centers that were set up in 2003, I think. Right. When Craddock was first speaker, after they took some money away from Planned Parenthood,
right,
gave it to these pregnancy centers.
Right. So, you know, she's changing her position on that. So the next set of questions, of course, is, you know, you're just doing this to do this, right? You know, you're doing this because the same reason Todd Staples is sending us this letter. And she says, you know, "I'm not doing it because of the political timing. I'm not doing it because of my political ambitions. And people are either going to believe me or they're not." but, you know, I'm just telling you. So she's changed her position on that. She is trying to staunch whatever bleeding is still left from the data thing. This is leaving 3.5 million names of public
including
employees.
Including mine.
And their personal information, social security numbers and
was
stuff
your number
like that.
On there too, Ross?
No. My wife's is.
Your wife.
Anyway, left this stuff out where people could get at it. She says nobody apparently got at it who knew what to do with it, that they have some kind of evidence. She wasn't specific about it, but they have some kind of evidence that anybody who did get a hold of this pile of data didn't know how to open it or what to do with it, and that they don't have any evidence that anybody was actually harmed in the making of this particular movie. So, trying to dig her way out. She's in a defensive position, though, going into races that, you know, Todd Staples thinks are underway now.
Why doesn't Todd Staples send a letter to Jerry Patterson? Is this a sign that he thinks she's a more formidable candidate?
I mean, she's got $5 million.
She's the one with the bucks.
Yeah, she's got $5 million in the bank. She's, you know, behind, I guess, Greg Abbott is without looking at it directly, she's got more money than anybody but Greg Abbott. Maybe Rick Perry is in there. But she's the giant.
So it's a compliment, really.
Right. Right, they don't shoot at you. Don't shoot at people who are behind you. You know, one of the reasons Perry's not saying nasty things about Mitt Romney right now. They want to position themselves as in front.
Ben, what do you got to say about this?
I'm still. I think it'll still be interesting to see how long this 3.5 million data breach has legs. You know, just talking to different people and trying to figure out if I need to have any kind of protection of my own name and ID, and my wife, both of ours were exposed.
And your data breach support group has a ton of
exactly. But you know, they say, look, this is not something that's going to happen. You're not going. Someone doesn't steal your ID and then open up a credit card a week later. Somebody steals your ID and a year and a half later
they
start
for a while.
Yeah, and then a year and a half later they start to hit you and they hit you hard. If it's organized, they hit you hard.
If they're competent.
She did say something funny that was sort of interesting. She said, you know, outside of Austin, nobody's worried about this. Which is one way to say, you know, this is an inside Austin thing. That's where all the state employees are. That's where all the people whose data was breached by this. So, you know, I guess she identified...
But you have the retirement systems, too. I mean,
right.
But,
you know, I don't know if that's right, but it's kind of an interesting line that this is an Austin invention and the rest of the state doesn't care about.
But the soonest this could come up is still a while away, and, it, you know, that also depends on Dewhurst becoming a U.S. senator.
Right.
So there
it
are other
depends on how everybody moves around on the org chart, right?
There are other races that are heating up sort of with a sooner deadline. You know, you have Christy Craddock getting into the Railroad Commission.
I think Christy Craddock versus Warren Chisholm is interesting. I thought Chisholm and Craddock were allies.
Well, they aren't.
Chisholm and her dad.
Right.
Yeah.
So Warren Chisholm, we haven't nailed him down on this yet, but Warren Chisholm either has to run against, either has to run against Christy Craddock or against Barry Smitherman. Smitherman is the former PUC head that Perry appointed for the other seat that's open on the Railroad Commission.
Michael Williams, the seat.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the third guy in this race is Roland Sledge, who's an oil and gas lawyer from Houston, and whose brother-in-law is Mike McKinney, Perry's former chief of staff. It's like a, you know, this is a pretty good little family fight we got going here. But Christy Craddock, you know, this is one of those things, George, I'm sort of reminded of a George Bush line, that when you get into your father's business, you get half of his friends and all of his enemies, and I think Christy may find that out.
Well, and it just goes to everybody moving up. I mean, there are people that have been waiting to run for something, and it doesn't matter if one of their friends is also running. They finally are having that chance to run.
Right. It's an open seat, and you're going to get a lot of people running for it. And then we've got all these legislative seats that are kind of in flux.
Bunch of people who've retired. Beverly Woolley is retired. Fred Brown is retired. You know, handful of other people. Kelly Hancock and Vicki Truitt, maybe.
Hancock is
running for Wendy Davis's Senate seat, which means presumably he's not running for his.
Yeah, by running for that seat, do you have to give up your House seat?
Yeah, it's either or.
So, and Vicki Truitt is talking about running.
Michael
Shelton,
Mark Shelton
is talking about running. Relatively new, only a couple years ago, a House member.
Charlie Howard's getting primaried.
I think the Charlie Howard thing is interesting. So in the Sugar Land district, you've got Charlie Howard, who is a veteran and extremely conservative House member.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the notion of somebody running at Charlie Howard from the right is kind of interesting.
Kind of out there.
You have in his challenger an African-American Republican Tea Party member who is, the first black city council member in Sugar Land.
She's now the mayor pro tem.
Now the mayor pro tem of Sugar Land, who is going to run against him in the primary on the grounds that he's not visible enough, not active enough, not...
Yeah, that he's, you know, she's just, she doesn't think he's, I talked to her yesterday, she doesn't think he's done enough that he's, you know, they see more John Zerwas and Joan Huffman than they do of Charlie Howard by her telling.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting. As the state becomes, you know, and in particularly in these districts, but as the state becomes more clearly a one-party state, it's going to be two parties in the Republican Party. And you're going to see a lot more of these March election right. fights.
Well, we now have down here in Central Texas, you got Michael Williams now running in 25, right, in the old Lloyd Doggett district.
Well, but I, you know, getting back to Charlie Howard, you're going to see more and more of these races where the fact that Charlie Howard tried to push for a snack tax is going to, you know, a fairly responsible tax that would have you paying sales tax on things like Doritos.
Right.
You know, that'll be used in the campaign.
Yeah, but the second
he'll
word
be a rhino
tax,
for it,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Tax,
yeah. Yeah,
it's not the snack part that they hear; it's the tax part.
But is
she's taking away your Cheetos, right?
Is she running at him from the right so much as she's just running at him as this sort of this new style of politician that we have, as someone that should be in the media causing a fuss all the time?
I don't know that she's going to run from the right, but the one way to look at the quote-unquote Tea Party candidates is that they're insurgent Republicans and they're running against traditional Republicans. And to some extent, you frame that as I'm running against an incumbent, this is the old way, I'm the new way. And you don't have to really necessarily get into right-left politics. You get into sort of, you know, in-and-out politics.
Well, the new way from her statement sounds like a highly visible, sort of more in-your-face type of politician.
Well, I know this woman a little bit. Let me tell you, she is obviously quite an energetic... I mean, she would fit that bill. But I think that the other thing is, and she's addressed her race.
She addresses
openly.
It without you
so
asking
let,
about
so
it.
So let me
right.
let me address it.
Right.
It's a good time to be a black Republican or a black Hispanic candidate because the party is excited about the idea of diversity
right.
in its ranks. It has been a knock against the Republican Party that it's an all white guys party or largely a white guys party. There were more Hispanic Republicans and more black Republicans in the legislature this year than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she'll find, you know, an unwelcome response. Leaving Howard aside, the idea of a young, you know, she's young-ish, black woman, a Tea Party-supported Republican, I think that's probably a good profile for her.
Right. Well, I think the people that ran against James White last time thought that they could sort of coast on the race issue, and right. that did not work out for them.
Well, one of the things she says that's interesting, and I think you ought to watch...
And her name, by the way, we haven't said her name. Her name is Jackie Chomet, the name of this mayor pro tem of Sugar Land.
Chomet.
Is it pronounced the T? Chomet?
This is pronounced the T.
This right. is why it we is weren't Chomet. Saying it.
I asked her, you know, so I said, you know, so next time I mispronounce it, you can blame me instead of yourself.
And Chomet.
Yeah.
Chomet.
So one of the things she says that I think is interesting is you see candidates you might otherwise label as ideological and inflexible. One of the things she says is, you know, I think I'm going to be more open-minded about issues. I think I'm going to be easier to approach, and I'm going to be more willing to listen to people than the incumbent is. It's kind of an interesting line. I mean, you know, because we're used to, after the last cycle, going into races where people were saying, well, so-and-so is not ideological enough. They're not 100%er.
Yeah.
You know, that's it.
100% has been the big, well.
Interesting to watch.
We'll see if Michael Quinn Sullivan gets upset at the fact that she's not 100%er.
It's going to be interesting as we watch the Republican Party sort of, you know, these splinter or factions within the Republican Party run against each other. It's going to be interesting to see how the third parties line up, and I think that's going to be some of the coding. Well, you don't necessarily know that this is a Democrat or this is a Republican, but you can say by their associations who this one is and that one is and the other one is.
You were talking about Michael Williams jumping into one of the Central Texas races. There was a... a report...
we're out of time
hearing.
If you just want to stop talking.
Hearing, that's right. There was a ruling from one of the judges here in Texas about what the trial dates were for the redistricting maps.
Right.
So do we know... I mean, does that help let us know how soon we're going to get these things? I mean, Michael Williams, does he have a district to run in? Will
no,
he have a different district?
No,
by
I
then?
Mean, we've had this problem before. I mean, it's, you know, every 10 years we have some version of this. The redistricting cases, all four of them, State Board of Education, House, Senate, and Congress, will go to court first week of September in San Antonio. It's a three-judge panel, one judge from the Fifth Circuit and two judges from San Antonio who are both federal judges. And you don't know when they're going to decide this thing, what they're going to decide, and when they decide, are they going to require new lines? Are they going to move the filing deadlines, which are now December 12th, to something else? They probably won't move election dates, but they can change the lines of these races. They can change the filing deadlines. They can change residency requirements. And they can also say, we're going to put this map in place for the 2012 elections, but we may be back in 2014 with another map. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff in flux.
Everything's here. In flux.
Yeah. Well, it's going to stay that way for now. So let's just kick this over to our guest announcer.
Questions and comments can be directed to podcasts, plural, at texastribune.org.
Thank you. On behalf of Evan, Ben, Ross, our producer Todd, this is reporter Reeve Hamilton. Thanks for listening.
Who's our guest intro this week?
We don't have one.
We don't have one.
Oh, come on. Started.